Welcome to New Legacy Radio with Christine Erickson. Are you someone who doesn't have children by circumstance, choice, or chance? This show is for our collective community. Are you someone who influences policy, DEI initiatives, or media narratives? Learn how you can co-create inclusive, equitable policies and environments for people without children. Now, here is your host, Christine Erickson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to New Legacy Radio. I'm Christine Erickson, and I'm your host. I'm also the founder of New Legacy Institute, which is intended to bring together our collective community, including gender inclusivity, and all of our experiences from our different journeys of childlessness or being child-free. And today we have a very special guest with us. We are going to speak about male involuntary childlessness with Dr. Robin Hadley. Thank you for being here today, Robin.
Thank you for inviting me. It's an honor.
I'm just going to say a few words about your background, and because we have so much to share today. But Robin has done his degree in focusing on involuntary childlessness in the lives of older men. It's really powerful work that you have in your book that I have read and your ongoing research and articles. And we thank you for that contribution to the community as a whole. He's an international expert on male childlessness and aging, and his research has been widely published in international and national media. He also supports several infertility and voluntary childless support groups. He's a founder member of the campaign group Aging Without Children in the UK as well, which is another wonderful group. So thank you again for being here, Robin.
Thank you. Thank you. That sounds really good. I didn't recognize myself.
You did some good things there. Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about your work focused on male childlessness, how that began, what inspired you, and what that journey was like for you?
Okay, well, I'm 62. I'm way back in the early 2000s in my full-time job as a scientific and technical photographer. It was obviously that was going to end. And so I was looking around for something else, and I decided to train as a counselor. And so I did the diploma in counseling, and then there was an MA, a master's element that I could take. And I took that, and because it was counseling, it had to be something you'd experience. And I said to my supervisor, you know, I was really broody in my 30s. And she went, well, I've never heard anything about that. Do that. And that's when I found out, really, there was nothing about men and the desire to become a father. In fact, there wasn't that much then about fatherhood. But, you know, not being a father, it was very little of the experience. I mean, there was stuff on infertility and that sort of thing, but that was sort of medical technical stuff. So I interviewed 10 men. And so the underlying question really was I the only man feeling terribly broody in my mid-30s when all my peers seemed to be having children? I'd married at 26, divorced at 29, and I'm at 35 or so. You know, they're having children. I'm not. You know, what's happening? I'm out of sync was the feeling. And also, I couldn't tell anybody about that. That was all just locked in and making me angry and frustrated. And so flipping into my 40s and the early 2000s, I did my MA, found out that there wasn't much about it, decided to self-fund an MSc, looking at levels of broodiness, because the assumption is women are broody and men aren't bothered. And this is a myth that comes through all the time. Men aren't bothered and they can have children at any time in their life.
Yes.
That's quite a dismissive way of dealing with men. And I found out that for men and women who weren't parents, then it was around about the same level of desire for parenthood. But one of the surprising things with that study was that men were more angry and more depressed and more jealous than the equivalent women. So there's an emotional side that really hadn't been touched on, I don't I feel. And also I asked about biological urge for men and women, and it was there for men as well. And that's again something you don't really associate with men, but could well be a driver for some behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And then I applied for a PhD at Keele University, and that's where I started my work on older men, childless older men, and men who want to be dads didn't get it. And that was for men age 52, whatever. And as it was, it was 14 men, 49 to just to 82. And so we got the whole life story then. And it was really interesting, I found, to hear the, those experiences along the way. And my experience sort of resonated there as well. So that's why I became interested. And I think one of the drivers was, why isn't there information on men? Because, you know, it's an egg and a sperm. It's 50-50.
Right.
So all this information of all sorts around women and very little around men. So that, that's why.
Yeah, well, that's a great why and a lot of why. Thank you so much for sharing all that. It's fascinating that you did that at those different stages too. I think that's really important to have that insight. When you said, you know, 50-50 and all of this about women, it is really curious how that's driven, because so much of fertility conversation, reproductive, the onus is put on women. There's a a drive to that as well. However, if we look at statistics, you know, what is it in the UK, 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 women will reach the age of 45 without children. And I'm so curious about the landscape for men and other genders, because we don't see that measured. And so we're going by statistics, by one gender. And that's just could be scratching the surface, right? In terms of the numbers of our community.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it is gendered around women, centered on women. And there's, I can't remember the first name, but Rousseau in 1974 said that the motherhood mandate is all around women. And it still is today. If you look at adverts, often nothing related, but a family will be there and a new baby will be there. For, I don't know, a vacuum cleaner or something like that.
Yeah,
but and very much around women, and not so much my man. Yeah, 1 in 5 women, 1 in 4 men in the UK, and I think the Pew Center in America found that as well in 2010. 1 in 5 women. They didn't give a figure for men, but it's probably higher. It is everywhere around the world, really. In effect, that there's more childless men than childless women, but you don't hear that. And that is, as you say, generally because when a birth is registered, the mother's fertility history is taken, and has that's been happening for decades. So you've got this big data set around women. So it's very easy to say, well, the fertility rate is this. I think it's 1.9 in the UK at the moment, and the replacement rate's 2.1. I think it's lower in America. It's been going down and down, hasn't it? 1.7 or 1.6 or something like that. So, yeah. But because they don't take the father's fertility history, we don't know the equivalent. So really the fertility rate is the women's fertility rate, not the population's fertility rate.
Yeah, and so we're behind in that binary. And then you look at, you know, what is today, we're not even talking about other genders yet. I mean, if we had all of these numbers, who would we be? What would that look like? And as we know, those are those census statistics, fertility data is what drives policy.
Absolutely.
Who gets included, who gets what, right?
And where the money goes.
Yes, yes. So it's a really important sort of cornerstone is starting with those statistics. You know, you say, well, numbers and laws don't change everything. They don't change the societal piece, you know, that I'm sure we'll touch on later. However, it's a start of showing that data. It's a start.
Yeah. Well, in the UK, the Statistics Authority, Office of National Statistics, I've written to them on several occasions, and then they're not bothered about collecting men's data. Oh, it costs too much. Well, if cost is a factor, then you can save money by not collecting data on women. But I don't think that would go down well.
Right, right.
But also, it's very short term because in the UK, and I think in many places in the world, in later life, family takes an awful lot of the strain of caring for their older parents. And if you don't have a child, an adult child looking out for you, in whatever way, whether that's just a phone call a week or just making sure the doctor comes round or whatever, then who does that? And what happens? And then those care and health and care facilities don't know that there's this hidden population that's coming towards them.
Right. And what with respect to that, what did you find in your study when you did look at the lives of older men? And I know it started at a lower age, but in terms of not having children to care for them, what do you see in that landscape?
Well, it was really interesting because the older men really were concerned about that, particularly in the UK. In the past couple of years, there's been quite a few events of poor care of older people in residences and stuff like that. And so one guy said, you know, I don't want to be going into one of those homes where they abuse you. I'd rather take my own life than suffer that humiliation. The younger men tended not to want to think about that. I don't want to go there.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. So it was very emotional. The interviews quite often is the first time they talked about it, even though they'd been married, that inner feeling. And that says something else about what how we're socialized to be and what social narratives are around. So there's a lot of social narratives around for women to occupy and are also thrown at them. Some are negative and some are positive. But for men, it's that sort of dismissal.
Yeah.
You know, you're not interested. Men don't care. And it's really interesting. If you look on social media, somebody who's got children, it's really interesting just to look at when they start saying, my soldier, my little man, what age? Because sometimes it's babies.
Absolutely.
But you don't get my little woman, my little soldieress. It tends to be my little princess. And I know women will say, yes, and I'm still a princess, even though I'm now decades older and I'm tired of being that. But
sometimes fair enough. Okay.
But there is that difference, and it starts at a very early age and it's very embedded in society.
Yes.
That this detachment from the internal emotional landscape and the social landscape and pathways through it that you have in terms of narrative, how you can say things, what you can say. And it's really hard to say something if you can't find the words. So all the men I've spoken to on this, whatever degree or whatever, they all say something's missing. And that's really key. Something's missing inside, something's missing from my life. But also there's something missing socially in the social narrative. And we can also say statistically we're missing as well.
Right.
So there's the structural, there's a whole how the mechanics of society, as well as the emotional side.
Yeah, it's heavy. It's deeply it layered. It's deeply layered, yes.
Yeah.
And so with that today, I mean, it's heart heavy to talk about. With that today, how do you see, you know, what is the social space for men around childlessness today? I mean, I know that, you know, you have definitely contributed to the space and you've written and you've been on several podcasts and I know of a few other men, you know, who are doing that. But I don't know what that what that looks like in terms of community, or what do men want and need in this space, you know?
That's a really good question. I think part of it, because there's so little around it, it's hard to know what men need. And with that missing element of a social narrative, mm-hmm. one of the reasons I do things like this and do the press and put my own story out there is so that men can say, and this is what I expect a man to say would be, yeah, I can see that, but it's not me. My story is this. Mm. So they bounce off mm-hmm. me doing this stuff and the other guys doing this. It's important that it's out there so men can bounce off something and claim an identity. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it wasn't there, there would be nothing to say, I'm like this. This is the difference. This is my experience mm-hmm. of it. So yeah, there's the clan, the brotherhood of clan then, but it's not. but there's the clan on Facebook for mm-hmm. childless, older childless men. There's certainly fertility-based ones specifically for men. But compared to the amount of data and support for women, it's very little. It is growing now, and I think there's a growing recognition of it as well. So I think the future's sort of brighter, but there's always going to be resistance mm-hmm. to that not being the ideal type, not being stoic, not being quiet, not just sucking it up and keeping it in mm-hmm. until that internal volcano explodes. Mm-hmm. It's much better if you can dissipate some of that internal energy and frustration at a lower level. And I think, yeah, the stuff happening, we need to get into policy, we need to get into politicians to make that mm-hmm. Acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you're speaking, I'm curious about, you know, particularly in the childless space, regardless of gender, I'm thinking, you know, the grief, the loss, the different experiences that we go through. If that, and you say that dissipation of, you know, that anger, that frustration, grief, if we have to navigate that first, or from a male perspective, I mean, of course it should be navigated, but from a male perspective, if a conversation's about policy and this end of it, is easier or more difficult? Is it still in that space of denial, or is it a more comfortable conversation potentially because it's not so personally?
I think it's more comfortable for me. But there again, I'm coming from a different angle to most mm-hmm. men. But I think most men don't struggle to see themselves as childless. Yeah. It's just not happened to them. But there's this part of, again, that socialization mm-hmm. that, you know, parenthood is for women. It's the primary thing for them, mm-hmm. and the men are on the outside. I'm on the outside. It would have been great if it happened, but mm-hmm. it didn't. So I'll go on the goal objective reaching trajectory that I've been socialized to be, to live outside myself, to be outside myself. So it's really interesting.
So the identification isn't even there to go in any of those directions, really.
Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry, I'm going to jump in here. Mm. It's really interesting, you know, sperm's the only cell that can live for any time outside the body. Mm. And men are sort of valued by what they do outside the body.
Wow.
You know, protector, provider, it's all outside themselves. And you could say women are judged by their internal production. So existentially, are we judged for women by mm-hmm. the internal values and what they bring, and for men outside of them? More heavy stuff.
Yeah. Yes, I like that's a chilling analogy and very insightful and true. Yes. Now I have so many
questions. Stunned you, haven't you?
Yeah,
I could read you a poem now if you want.
Thank you very much.
Would you like me to do that? Very short poem.
I think, do you have a poem?
I have a poem, yeah.
Okay, read a poem.
It's called Something Missing, and it's from my MA.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. And it's about reflecting on what the guy's been saying to me. So it's called Something Missing. Mm-hmm. A conversation ended before it began. Scatterings, thoughts of coulda, shoulda, woulda, dada, the latent maelstrom of the non-man. There's something missing, holding a life-wide gap. Breathing wallpaper, I am whole and incomplete. There's something missing, first to be left behind, first to be sent in. This line is incomplete. I'm sorry to all the poets out there who are going...
No, that was beautiful. Thank you for sharing it with us. No, I just, when you're talking about, you know, the internal and the external, this is a quick diversion, but it's making me think too about in the childless space, I think so often about what is visible is valued and what is not visible is just remains unseen or unspoken. Mm. Those missing conversations, missing experiences being acknowledged, and that visibility quotient culturally, how we can accept or not people's experiences based on not only how we can identify with them personally as a status quo, but how seen it is. Like, it's like you're proving the experience. Mm. So if you don't have a child, or if you wanted a child and don't, we still are in that space of how is it that you're grieving something that didn't exist?
Yeah.
Those kind of conversations, and we'll come back to that outside of the show at some point. But that was a really powerful analogy that you gave about, you know, the focus on women internally and men externally. Wow! So we said that, and you shared your poem, and now it's like a time to take a breath, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very powerful stuff. I'm curious what your interaction is with other men. Like, when you engage in these conversations, is it one-on-one? Is it generally in groups? Is it, you know, more of the space of webinars and sharing your experience? Or what does that look like for you?
Well, a bit like my relationship to my childlessness, it changes over time and in space and in context. So I guess with my two closest buddies, let's put it that way, to go for a beer with, they've both got children. One's now a granddad. And I'm not lost in but I'm not the side of some of their conversations. In that, one of the guys said, "Oh, well, we've all experienced this about being a parent." I haven't actually.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a silence, and we got another beer and moved on. I've done, they know my research,
right?
They've got copies of my book, but it's something about the natural being of being a parent. That's your world, and that's a world that I can see from the outside, and have some empathy with it. I'm on the outside of it, but it's also that part of me that's lost, that's not inside me on that one. But yes, I do this sort of thing, and whatever I can, I think, because I think it's important people know that men feel, and men feel the loss, and men want to be dads. And if you're feeling something and thinking something, but there's I'm going to do to a car. So if you got the engine running, you put it in gear, but you're going nowhere.
Yeah.
That's a lot of energy.
Absolutely.
That's being contained. And that can be very frustrating, particularly, let's go on a freeway or a motorway. If you're on the hard short one, the breakdown lane, whatever it is called in America, and people are whizzing past you, and you're thinking, if only I could just get it in fit, if only I can just catch up, if only I can be there. And again, with that freeway thing, you know, look, either side, people are whizzing past you, or you're going faster than others, I guess is another thing, but there is a difference. I think I'm rabbiting on that. I'm not quite sure if my...
No, I like that. I was thinking more within the childless space, other childless men, but I love that too, because that, I love what you shared, because that assumption is always in the room. I remember several years ago, I was sitting in a cafe and I was just working on something. And there was a group of women next to me who were they were clearly in a book club. And they were discussing this book, but they were right next to me and they were loud. I was not trying to eavesdrop, but the whole discussion, they never got to the book. It was all about their children and grandchildren. And I remember just thinking, like, not only was I sitting separate from them by myself, but they were in this circle. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, I will never be in that kind of circle. You know, it just, it was like a physical representation of what I was thinking or what that reality is. But the assumption first of children, I understand, you know, our status quo culture, and you want to feel safe. You check out, do other people, are they the same as you? What do we share in common? You know, people go down these lists. Are you married? Do you have children? You know, what's your job? What do you do? And I've always, even before I knew I wouldn't have children, I found those questions so invasive. I thought, you know, when you allow someone to share what they want to share with you, there's a real connection. You know, it's not this checklist of sort of who this person is, because it doesn't really tell you anything about who they are anyway.
Yeah.
It just tells you a status.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure everybody who's childless has had this, when somebody says, you know, how many children have you got? I haven't got any. And then the screens come down, the blinds come down, and I've had people just turn and walk away. And I'm sure other people have. It's like, well, I've got nothing with you then.
Yeah, where do I go with this?
Yeah. Well, you don't exist
with you
now. And so with childless men, all the guys I interviewed for my PhD, on the very initial contact, they all said, do you have children? And when I said, no, I don't, so, oh, well, you'll know what it's like then.
Wow. Yeah, even just that,
yeah, you'll know what it's like then. And it's like this very, like a gas of a group, really, because it's very widespread and all gaps between, but we have got a shared experience.
Yes. Yes.
And it's connecting. And I think I said before, most of the guys said, I've never talked to anybody about this again. So there's something around not being able to communicate, not having the words, not having the social narrative.
Well, and it's so powerful that you could bring that space of invitation and trust through your research based on your own experience. I mean, I'm very much an advocate of research and expressions and books done by people who have had that experience or survivors of things. I think we need so much more of that in so many spaces in life, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, well, thank you. This has been a really wonderful conversation so far, and I really appreciate you being here and sharing so openly. We're going to continue this conversation after a very short break with Dr. Robin Hadley.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
New Legacy Institute is committed to equitable and inclusive change for people without children. We invite you to become a member of New Legacy Institute and to share what matters most to you. Participate in our research surveys, upcoming webinars, and efforts to influence policy, media narratives, and DEI initiatives that fully recognize our community. Check us out online at newlegacyinstitute.com. Join us today.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to New Legacy Radio with Christine Erickson. Now back to the show. Here is Christine Erickson.
Welcome back, everybody. We are having a wonderful discussion with Dr. Robin Hadley today about male childlessness. And Robin, last week I spoke with Laura Carroll about, we came to this point of speaking about two camps, sort of in the people without children community, the collective community, where there are childless people and child-free people. And the inference is by choice and not by choice. And I know we both know there are a lot of gray areas and layers to how we either stay in or move toward those identifications. But it has sort of become this binary, if you will. We've gone through a lot of renditions of identifying names and hashtags and that. And so our conversation was about, you know, coming together, those two camps coming together. Mm. And I'm curious about how that plays out with men in terms of child-free men and childless men identifying in that way, and what that collective or separate conversation is, or what that looks like.
That's a really good question. I've not really interviewed any child-free men, but I've had chats with them. And from the literature I've read, the shared experience for the involuntary and child-free or childless by choice, so that's another conversation again about right. Who calls themselves and how people self-define and yes. What that means to them. So we're including everybody.
Right.
We just can't go through the list of
yes.
everyone. Just if you're listening
for that,
and
yes.
we're not using your term, just insert your how you identify yourself and maybe let Christine know
yes.
your term. So we all
very
can
good.
And
good.
But the shared experience of stigmatization, of not having a narrative, of being different, of disenfranchisement from society and grief. So that's the sort of one shared identity that goes. I'm both involuntary or circumstantial childless and childless by choice. Sometimes say something like, you know, I'm having problems with that, particularly women. You know, we're going down the testing route, even though they're not, because that's an acceptable cover to pass by.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then rather being than faced, well, why aren't you having children? Why aren't you being greedy? And all those sort of negative things for women. And I guess, I don't think for men, but certainly for women, you know, you're just career focused.
Naturally.
That old one, but it still comes through, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
So I think men and women have that same societal hurdle to get over. Mm-hmm. And how they do that, possibly a bit easier for men because there's not that volume and mass around reproduction that there is for women. And you can occupy that space. Well, you know, I can have children at any time. So there's always with these things, you can use them if you want to. To say that, or you can say I've not had the right one. Certainly, the two gay men I spoke to, the older men, and so I was 15, I knew I was gay, but I also knew I wasn't going to get married, so I wasn't going to have children, because in those days, to be married was the way to have children, not having children outside marriage was absolute taboo. And there was an element for those two guys that was a bit of jealousy of the younger gay men who now have an opportunity, certainly in the UK with the equality laws, and also with technology, with IVF and surrogacy being available, wasn't really available then. So there's a slight air of jealousy that they've missed out.
Yeah, but it's heartbreaking.
Interestingly enough, those two guys were both types of grandparent. One had been asked by some kids at school to be their surrogate grandfather, and another one had worked in a pub, and he'd been an unofficial grandfather, and unrecognised as well. But he bought the kids presents, babysat them, all that sort of thing, and got a lot from it. But it just wasn't acknowledged that's what he was doing. He wasn't called Grandpa Jack. But yeah, so it is interesting. I think the child free and involuntary child, I think it's the common ground, but also people change as they go through their life. So you may be childless by choice, but then hook up with somebody who's got children, and then that may change later on. So it's difficult just to go, there's this.
Yeah, I know.
But I think for childless by choice men, some are very activist-based. So this is an identity and I want to promote this. And they're in groups and stuff like that. And I think the same for women. And others are passing. They don't mention it. It's their choice.
And it's passing
too much trouble. Again, that's from the LGBTQI community of passing as heterosexual. In the days when it was illegal to be homosexual, to be gay. So yeah, you'd pass at work, whatever, and then have another life.
Yeah, I've spoken with women who are partnered with women who say, well, of course we didn't think we'd have children, we're gay.
Yeah.
You know, that how those narratives get so embedded, you know, and yes, technology has changed and things have changed, thank goodness. But it's just, it's part of that status quo narrative of this means this and this means this and you can do this and you can't do this. And, you know, preposterous of you to think you could. And yes, some things have changed and so many have stayed the same, you know, unfortunately, in this othering or defining what anyone's lifestyle means or doesn't mean is, you know, we still have a long way to go. Absolutely. And my curiosity, you know, is because I want to know, but it's also driven by the work of the Institute, New Legacy Institute. It is truly intended to be inclusive, not only of all of our journeys, but gender-wise. And I think bringing those and everything you've shared today, bringing different voices together, the other layers, the other intersections that people live, make that extremely difficult to just come into one space, you know, whether you're looking at it from the male perspective as you are, or race, economic status, you layer things, people's reproductive experiences or lack of freedom thereof. You layer all of those things and it looks like we're just talking about this one thing, but we have to address all of these things, you know, and starting with the conversation we're having with you today, and I know you've had it in other spaces, it's not the first time, but in the sense of, well, what does that look like? You know, why are men here? Why are people vocal and not? And what allows that? And so my curiosity is always, how do we center different voices and differently center voices to make these changes? You know, we have to look at and consider all of those layers from, as you said, the time a male child is born, you know, my little soldier, it's really from that point forward, whatever those life realities are. And so I'm looking at it from the other end of how do we have the conversation over here, you know, and there's so many layers to peel back.
there are so many. No, well, I think you look for the commonalities.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. My experience is 1 to 10. Yours is -4 to 5. But there's an area where it's there, and you tell me about your experience. Yeah. I'll tell you about mine, and we get the commonalities, but we can see the difference, and we can appreciate the difference.
Yeah.
And we can work with the difference.
Yeah.
So a shared difference, right, as well as the shared commonalities, I guess, would be part of that, of having a broader view and broader appreciation. And maybe that's just not rushing in to judge.
And sometimes, at least in the childless space, I think, and I'll say in my experience, so often there's just a missing acknowledgement. There's also a missing narrative, but just the acknowledgement of things. And that's in people's layered life experiences as well. But certainly in the childless space, it's people skirt around it. As you said, someone walked away, but families don't talk about it. You know, people's families, friends, it's, you know, you might be accepted or not, but it's still, the conversation is avoided. And so to open up a space, as you did with your research, saying, no, this is my experience, you know, this is a safe space, you know, a psychologically safe space in that way. That's what we're working toward with the Institute, because we mean it, you know, and we want all of our voices. We want that representation. It isn't anything without that, you know? So we invite more of that conversation, for sure.
Sure. And as you're speaking, I think about Maslow's hierarchies, you know, and growth and fulfillment, and hearing other people's stories, having empathy with their experience. So you understand their experience is growth, and it's a two-way street in that element. Somebody gets to share their experience and are listened to and are acknowledged.
Yeah. And I do think, I don't know how you feel about it from a men's perspective, but as a gross generalization in the childless community, and I know with Childless Week, which is inclusive, you know, I do think that we, as a community, we are a lot more, becoming more visible through our stories in that way. And do you still see that? Do you see that more heavily dominated from a female perspective still, or do you see men coming into those spaces more easily, either as, you know, themselves or as a couple, or what does that look like, you know, in percentages? Or you don't have to come up with a percentage. I don't know why I said that. I was just thinking that, and I'm like, just give me the number, professor.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just switch on the flux capacitor, and it'll generate a number straight away.
Who needs the census?
Yeah. Okay. That funny bit has thrown me off.
I was just looking at the participation, for example, in Childless Week and sharing stories and men.
Back in the room. In the Guardian newspaper in the UK, just recently there's been a couple of stories around childlessness and male desire for fathering and stuff like that. So I think it's coming in. I think a lot of it's to do with infertility, though.
Yes.
So they're not recognizing people like me. I've never been to an infertility clinic. I've never given a sample or anything like that. And there's an awful lot of us who are like that, who are childless by circumstance. For me, it's economic, and also not being great at forming relationships. I did some research with John Barry and Chloe Newby. And found out anxious attachment in childhood predicts childlessness. So anxious attachment means the time with generally your mother, you're not quite sure what's going to happen. And that becomes an inner working model for you. So you think, or you don't think, you feel actually, how is this going to work for me? And for me, in my teenage, late teenagers and 20s, how I ever got married when I did, it's unbelievable, but she stuck with me. It would be, you know, should I approach Christine? But I might get rejected. And if I get rejected, it's going to be devastating.
Yeah, what you make it mean. What you make that mean, yeah.
But yeah, what you made that mean. Because at some point, my inner working model has made that a bit of an anxiety around what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it could be negative. And that goes on through life. So as you get older, older people sometimes just assume to be wise, assume to be confident.
Yes.
When in fact they can be anxious and struggle and shy. Shyness would be a term that would go. And I was very shy. So I was behind my peer group in getting a relationship, in forming a relationship, and all that sort of thing. So there's that element as well.
Yeah, it's back to those internal things, right? Those unseen things. And I think fertility, even, you know, and this is another topic for another day, but the, even in companies, you know, when we look at changing policy and having equitable benefits, we're seeing some companies slowly move into the fertility services benefits space. And again, I think it's, and that's a whole nother conversation because you can't do that without speaking about childlessness because the outcome of fertility treatments. But looking at that, I think that companies are taking that as a starting point, both is a financial step because it saves money overall in, from their perspective. Again, another conversation. However, I see that as because, again, it's a more tactile, tangible, physical thing, right? You are going to have a baby. And this is the way that you can do it and you can do it later. Whereas when you're talking about shyness and types of attachment from childhood and all of the things that shape our lives, you know, that's not what we're looking at. When someone walks away from you, when they say, when you say, I don't have children, they're not thinking, oh, he must have had anxious attachment, or maybe he was shy, or maybe he's challenged by relationships. They're just like, oh, well, that doesn't fit in my narrative. I don't know what to do with that, you know? But fertility is still, that word is still in a possibility and people know what the outcome is, which is again, something physical. So I think it's that visibility scale that, of acceptance, even in that space, like that they're starting there. It's so curious to me and I'm probably not expressing it as well as I want to, but it's just a very curious space to me, that that visibility, acceptance, physical space.
Yeah, and I think that there is a difference between people going through infertility treatment and maybe getting a diagnosis of infertility and people like me who hasn't. There's a narrative around infertility and people know how to react to it. It's a shame. But for me, well, why aren't you? Well, you know, I was a bit shy, economics at the time, and economics play a big factor in fertility decisions. And that's not often really appreciated. For men, quite often, so I got in a cab once and just started my research and the guy asked me what I was doing and I said, you know, well, we're childless because I used to work I was in the army and then I was in drilling and mining and oil. I was always away. I'd been married 40 odd years. He was 70 odd. And it wouldn't have been fair because the work was precarious. You never knew when it was going to end. So you could start a job and then get fired or it could go on for years. But it was always short-term contract sort of thing. And it wouldn't have been fair on my wife to be left with the kids and not knowing when I was coming back and stuff like that.
I think that conscientiousness, it's structural and it's systemic, those reasons as you're talking about. And also the consciousness of so many people who do not have children, however they identify, is often left out of the overall narrative. No one gives you a reward, you know, for not bringing a child into situation X. You know, they don't say, well, good job for not doing that, right? It's a It's curious to me too.
I think also, you know, in that thing of people walking away when you say I'm childless, it could well be a reflection of actually I can't face that it's an existential threat.
Yes, of yes, being absolutely.
And not being, and one thing kids do is they're a nice deflector. You know, you're alive because they're there in front of you. So I like to think of, you know, if we're
very true
aircraft, you know, there's transponders going. Where are you? Where are you? And when we're raised in our social narratives, the ideal type is what we're told to aim for, which in my case, my parents, I'm a working class lad, a family of eight, were, you know, get a very steady job with a good pension because they'd been in precarious jobs without a good pension and so had their grandparents. And, you know, get married and have kids. And then, you know, when I'm 35, I'm divorced. I'm in a steady job, but where's the other bit? So my trajectory compared to the arc of life, the ideal arc of life, is a gap. And my ping to know where I am is getting longer and longer. And in that silence, I fall. Whereas if you have children, you know you're alive because they're there in front of you all the time. And also you spend yourself for your child.
Yes. Yeah, it's absolutely an existential fear response, for sure. I appreciate that. And then once you have a child, systemically, everything feeds into that.
Oh, yeah.
Not in the sense that, you know, in the US, of course, we do not have great parental leave and all of those things. We still need that in childcare. So I'm not saying that we're doing it in a great way, but from language to social responses to those to policy, there is consideration there. How well it's done is a whole, again, another conversation.
From the male point of view, from men's, I don't represent all men. I appreciate that. Right. I should have said that at the top. But some research, I feel that if you become a dad, there's a social narrative you can occupy.
Yes.
About
yes.
a provider. You know, well, I can be a real. Insert explicit at work now because I've got to provide, and also that social narrative. Well, he's got to provide, so he gets a promotion.
Absolutely,
that happens. And I guess the same for women.
Yes,
a different context.
Yeah, you can exist in this lens, so to speak. Yeah. Question. Yeah,
and that becomes a shared identity.
Yes.
You know, so if your boss is older than you, but a grandparent or a parent, then you've got things to talk about. Strollers, nappies, all that.
Yeah, it's a very powerful social narrative that holds that space.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, before we go, I would like to give you an opportunity to speak about your book. I think I forgot to mention... I may have forgotten to mention that at the beginning. We did talk about your research, which was wonderful. Yeah. And where people can find your book and reach you.
Okay. My book is called How is a Man Supposed to Be a Man? He said, looking behind him so he could read the title.
It's on the shelf.
It's on the shelf. Male Childless, A Life Course Disrupted. And it's published by Bergen Books. So you can look for that, or you can find it on my website, which is robinhadley.co.uk, or I'm on Twitter and on Instagram, but honestly, I have no idea what's going on there. So probably the worst way.
We have another shared narrative. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll be posting your contacts on our page along with the recording of our episode, which will be available soon. And please, we invite listeners, whether you're listening live or later, to continue this conversation with us on Twitter, on the website. Email us questions at radio@newlegacyinstitute.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts and questions. Thank you for being with us today. And thank you for engaging both in the Institute and in these conversations. We appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you for listening to New Legacy Radio. We hope Christine and her guests have given you the context and insight to connect with our community in new ways. What personal or professional change might you consider to acknowledge and include in our diverse community of people without children? Until we speak again, we invite you to engage with us on any of our platforms.